Hello and welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Monica, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 31 through 36 of The Tyrant's Tomb.
It's a lot going on in these.
These were devastating. Because I knew it in my gut that something was going to happen. But I also was like comforted by the fact that we had just dealt with Jason's death. Yeah. And that was the thing that brought all the listeners in and everyone was freaking out about. So I was like, this is the big thing that happens in this series. Mm-hmm. But the way that these chapters are, we end on a complete cliffhanger. And mm-hmm. I can't read ahead because I want to record my reaction for you guys, but I did this reading yesterday or 2 days ago, and I haven't been able to like read forward, and so I've just been going quietly crazy. It's actually quite loud. I've been loudly going crazy. But my concerns of being nervous, if you will, scared and nervous about Frank's well-being, because the way Rick was writing him was very sacrificial and just like it was making me really worried. And this cliffhanger ends with him like bursting into flames. And so I was like stunned, because at least with Jason, I knew that there was probably something coming up. No, I didn't know anything. What am I talking about? Looking back, I was completely blindsided by that one too. This one, I'm like, there's still hope. Because there's still more of the book, and yet they haven't Jason, there was like the way that we chunked it out was like he dies and we see his body and they have like a low key funeral mourning ceremony for him. So it's like very much that he's dead and there's no question.
He's also had three more funerals for Jason in this book. There's been like multiple renditions of the song where he's making sure we all really know.
Jason is like dead. Which is like why I'm hoping that like it isn't this trend of him just being like, well, so we've like done Jason's funeral. Now we can do Frank's funeral for the next book and a half. Like, I was like thinking when I was reading it, I was like, did Rick hear us like complaining about the coupling, like how everyone was paired off and his like response to it? Cause he's been correcting himself through the series of the things that we didn't like.
Really about has.
Except for Leo. He's like, what if I just made this character worse?
What if he got worse?
Well, that's why I was like, is his solution to like, instead of breaking them, so he broke Jason and Piper up and then he killed Jason just to like drive home the fact that they're not a couple. And I was like, is he going to kill Frank too? Just like kill off all the boys. And he killed Leo's character. So same thing. So then like we can all be happy about it. I don't know, man.
Yeah. And he's like, I support women. I kill women. Don't worry, you guys.
Feminism.
Yeah. He doesn't kill as many women. I think about it. He's an ally.
Wow. Well, I really loved Frank in this chapter. I loved his characterization.
Yeah.
I think it's actually stronger than even when we got his POVs in Heroes of Olympus. Mm-hmm. Because we get to see him as like a very soft. I think it also helps that he is age appropriate with Hazel. Like he was a little bit like teeth, like a little bit on edge when you're reading Frank being in love with Hazel. Also the Heroes of Olympus was mostly like introduction of Frank. And this weird love triangle with him and Hazel and Leo. So that took up a lot of the time. Frank then like massacres a bunch of cows and becomes really hot.
And that plot line, like some of the plot lines in Heroes of Olympus, I think back on it. I'm like, what?
And then he just becomes Praetor. And then that's like the whole thing. Also like, over the course of the series, is like he's introduced. We learn about his like very interesting background. He gets this firewood. He finds out he can morph into different animals. He kills a bunch of cows. He becomes hot. He has a love triangle between Hazel and Leo because Leo looks like Hazel's
like ex-boyfriend
because he's her grandson.
Yeah,
and then they finally get together-ish and deal with it. And then Frank kills a bunch. Yeah, he kills a bunch of cows, becomes hot, becomes praetor, kills Gaia, goes back to Rome, and now
has a job.
He has a job. He has a full-time job. He's in his PJs. He kind of doesn't feel like he's qualified for it. Like,
yeah, he definitely doesn't think he's qualified.
He's having trouble, but he's like there. He's like a great counterpart. I feel like when writing Reyna and Jason as praetors, or even Reyna and Percy as like praetors, and like them supposed to be having this partnership, professional partnership, I think Frank and Reyna are the most balanced.
Because I agree, they both, actually, yeah.
Frank takes Reyna very seriously, is very like, he's a little scared of her, but he really respects her, but he's also like able to tell her what to do and is very calm and kind of more of like a softer version of a praetor, whereas Reyna can then be like the, this is the battle, this is the commands, like blah, blah, blah. And then the way also that they're all like, they are always in, one of them is in pajamas at all time because the other one's taking over. I think it's just, they're a good partnership. So yeah. If he's dead, I will kill Rick myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have a list of reasons too. We're actually going to be meeting. No, we're not meeting him. I'm like, we'll we're actually having an intimate dinner with him. God. We're inviting him over to murder him. No, we'll be seeing him from afar. And we'll probably just politely clap.
And then he'll be like, oh, like, do you want to stay and like set? What if he talks about, now I'm getting nervous. What if he talks about the sun and stars? And he spoils the series for me.
I hope he doesn't. I saw somewhere that this book is supposed to be like in between Heroes of Olympus. Or I don't remember.
Wait, like this book or before?
I don't know. The Chalice of the Gods is supposed to take place after Trials of Apollo, I think.
Yeah. But
before The Sun and the Star.
No, but what if he spoils Trials of Apollo for me? Like,
that would be awkward. I feel like because it's about Percy.
Yeah, that's true. But when he's like, maybe someone asks him a question about like when you were writing Trials of Apollo, and then the ending happens. Like, what did you feel? Like, what was going through your head? And I'm just there having like palpitations because
yeah.
You just have to really quickly anticipate what he's about to say and cover my ears.
Yeah, or I'll come up with like a better spoiler to tell you that's like more shocking, so you forget what he said, and maybe it's not even a spoiler what I said, you know?
So you gaslight me.
Trust me. I'm going to gaslight you. I'm going to be like, Tyson has a baby.
Don't even. Does he carry it?
I can't put that idea into Rick's mind. He's going to be like, brilliant. And it's a tattooing prophet.
It's got wings.
It has wings. Oh, it loves peanut butter.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah.
Well, to summarize what we're going to be talking about this episode, Apollo, Reyna, and Meg are going to get back to camp just in time for an epic battle with the Emperors and their quote-unquote impressive army.
I had some thoughts about their impressive army, honestly. Like, I'm like, your army is the freaking Blemye? Like, okay, wow, scary. The face chest men.
Who can't understand jokes.
Yeah, and they're like really polite as they stab you. Like, I know he mentions there's a lot of casualties and Romans die, blah, blah, blah. But like, I would be laughing at this army. What a joke. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like I have the less interesting, but a lot is going on in these. Lot is going on in these chapters, which was, I was struggling to take my notes because I was like, what is it? Suddenly they're like fighting and then. Anyway.
Also, the setting always starts confusing me because though I'm reading, I'm like imagining something in my head, and then he'll add like then the tunnel appeared. I'm like, what are you talking? I thought we were in a forest, or Apollo's suddenly running uphill, and then suddenly he's running downhill. And I'm like, why wouldn't he go around the hill? Like, I don't understand.
I struggle with like battle scenes and books, and also just like scene setting, I think, because my brain wants to create its own scene, you know?
Yeah,
and
when it really does.
when they give me too many details, I'm like, that's wrong. There's not a hill there. I have a whole image and then I get tripped up. I want it to just be like dialogue and vibes.
Well, that's how I feel about characters too. I'll like read an entire book and be like, this character has like red hair. And then like the character's beautiful blonde hair. I'm like, the what?
You're like, who? You're wrong.
This? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got chapters 31 through 33. So chapter 31. Oh, blood moon rising. Take a rain check on doomsday. I'm stuck in traffic. I recently tried to play the Zelda game, and there's something about the blood moon in that.
Oh.
That's all I have. I'm not going to lie, I got bored because there was too much to do, and I kept getting killed.
Yeah,
I think
me
personally,
too.
Coming down against Link, personally, I think he's a boring protagonist.
Because he doesn't just speak.
Like, he doesn't speak, and he's just like a knight. I don't know. I didn't get all the background.
Cute.
I went on a whole rant because I kept getting killed, and I was like, who is this guy? He doesn't have a shirt on. He's just some dude. Why can't I be a girl? And then Mike was like, maybe don't play this game. Anyways, they emerge from the shipping container and immediately are dive-bombed by angry ravens. Apollo decides, he's like, you know, I still feel bad about what I did to Harpocrates and the Sibyl, but I don't feel bad about the ravens anymore. He has a comment where he's like, they're thriving, so I don't care about killing them. So he shoots down a bunch of them until they all retreat. Unfortunately, they have other problems on the horizon. From high up on the tower, they're able to spot 50 yachts in V formation, which I love for Caligula. I'm imagining he, like, practiced this a lot. Mm-hmm. He was like, we gotta get information. We gotta all go at the same exact speed. They're all gliding toward the San Francisco Bay. Meg uses her plant powers to, like, make a bunch of vines to carry them down the tower, and then she passes out because it was a lot of magic. They make their way back to the Chevy and head towards camp. And I was like, wow, we haven't seen Rick do this trick where he makes someone pass out so the other two can bond. I haven't seen that in a bit.
I was going to say, we've seen that, not recently. Yes, that's true.
It was like the entire of the Lost Hero was like constantly, Piper's knocked out. Jason's knocked out. Leo's missing. Yeah.
Well, because it's like usually Apollo and Meg, just the two of them, or Meg is an easy character to just like have her scamper off or be doing cartwheels in the background.
Yeah, just not listening.
Yeah, and so then Apollo and, for example, when they were hiking, like Meg is just like running with the dog so Reyna and Apollo can have a moment alone.
Yeah.
But I feel like the Heroes Olympus, he was like very insistent on them always being in a trio, and then he was like, but they don't have any character development.
So Reyna tells Apollo that she thinks he did good back there, and he's still feeling like shit about himself because he's like, oh yeah, I did good. I'm holding the last breath of the god I bullied in the jar of the Sibyl I cursed because I sucked. And Reyna's like, well, it's a lot of progress that you actually know you sucked. And like she's like, you have a conscience now. It's like, wow, the bar is so low.
Bar is in hell, actually. Well, yeah. That's my favorite thing, especially with men, when you're like, or even when you're talking to someone who's telling you a lot of like issues and you don't know how to respond. So you're, for me at least, I'm always like, well, the first step is like, you know, at least like you acknowledge the things that you've done wrong, because you can't just like go in on them because they're clearly being vulnerable with you and they're explaining like themselves and the things that they did wrong, but there's like alarm bells going off in my head. I'm like, how did you not realize it for so long? And so then the only diplomatic thing I can really say is like, you know, like the first step is like really understanding, like it's such a big step for you to understand the things that you've done wrong. And then next step is try to make amends for those. And then you leave it and you walk away and you're just kind of like, I'm not hanging out with that person again.
Yeah, Reyna being like giving him claps for having a conscience is the same energy as like the people from high school on Facebook that post about their husband like cleaning the floor. They're like, I'm so lucky. He spoils me. And I'm like, okay. I'm so glad he did chores and he needed a whole post about it.
My favorite is like the I mean, I don't think it's actually true, but the meme of people being like, you know what, a marriage is falling apart when they do a random fall photo shoot.
Yes. I saw that pop up recently and I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
That seems right. They're like trying to bring the spark back, you know, with pumpkins and an expensive photographer.
Yeah. It's like one thing to do it with, like, I don't know, kids and your dogs and stuff. It's like a very sexy, like, engagement style photo shoot. What are you doing?
What's going on there? And then the divorce post comes out like 3 weeks later.
I wish there was divorce posts for like for people that you know. Yeah, I need to know. I've been invested. Yeah. And you just like suddenly delete him off your Instagram. Like, what did he do? Tell us.
I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, I agree.
A joint statement is necessary.
I think that people should do statements if they have any amount of followers, you know?
Yeah.
I think that people should make friendship breakup statements. Because sometimes I'm always like, why don't they hang out anymore? Like, I want to know. I want to know what happened. I think that we should start that.
We should, like, stop speaking just so we can make, like, in the statement, we'll explain the friendship ended because we wanted to make a statement.
We'll be posted and then another statement like a day later, like the friendship is back on. Thank you so much for your support during this time and respecting our privacy.
During this really troubling time, we have lost the plot completely.
What we're talking about, I don't know what's happening. Been really personally affected by Sophie and Joe's divorce.
I know, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Who knows? Oh. By the time this episode comes out, what new tea will be out?
I know. The devil works hard, but Joe Jonas's publicist works harder.
Yeah, he's really doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
So Raina then instructs Apollo to get something out of the glove compartment because she's driving. She's like, no texting and driving here. Mm. It's a communication scroll, which they use to connect with Frank. Frank is in the Caldecott tunnel, and he says he's doing defensive stuff, which concerns Raina because she did not tell him to do that. Mm-hmm. That was not part of their plan. And also, the yachts have gotten past the Golden Gate Bridge because apparently they had Michael Cahale, who I remember being a character in the very last Heroes of Olympus book.
Yeah, barely.
And his people were like there, but clearly the boats got past them. They were supposed to stop the yachts before they reached the bridge. Frank keeps breaking up and his words aren't all getting through. And then the scroll bursts into flames and it wakes Meg up. So no more time for bonding with Raina and Apollo. Raina is concerned about Frank because they never discussed him being in the tunnel and he's been so reckless lately and like very like war oriented, very strategic lately. She's like, what is he planning? What's going on? They need to get back fast. They navigate past closed roads. I thought it was funny that they're like, oh no, the highway is closed. Mm-hmm. Like me every day on my way to work and new road is closed. They're stopped in their tracks by a zombie. It's very reminiscent of chapter one. It lands on the truck ceiling and like digs its little claws in. But Raina's like, no, we're not dealing with this. She has I just lost the word. What are the small stabby knives called?
Dagger?
A dagger! Thank you.
Small stabby knives. What is a Raina's sword small, but shrunk?
I feel like Raina, if she was real, would like stab me for calling it that, you know?
Yeah,
she'd be like, this is, you're a disgrace.
This is why she and Percy would have never worked.
Yeah, that's true. So Raina straight up stabs the zombie, but unfortunately for Apollo, when it gets stabbed, he too feels like he's being stabbed thanks to the like fun zombie wound he has. So clearly there's some kind of like hive mind thing going on. They're all connected. He lets go of the wheel because he's in pain and they go flying off the highway. Which, again, is very much like the first chapter.
This could have been avoided if they switched roles, if Meg had taken the wheel and Apollo was pressing the brakes, or if they just, like, properly shifted into the driver's seat so only Meg was driving. I don't know, man. Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of thinking that went into this. Yeah. So chapter 32, we have a special Today on Slightly Used Trucks. Thanks, Target shoppers. So they come to in a Target parking lot. They're all alive somehow. I don't know how. He says, I think it's because of PTSD. I have very unclear memories of how I got there.
Convenient.
I think Rick just didn't want to explain how they did not die.
Well, because I remember I had to reread that at the beginning of this chapter like a couple of times because I was like, what? Did I miss something?
Because he's suddenly like, I'm pushing Meg in a shopping cart.
Yeah.
What? What? But they're all like definitely brain damaged or something. They're very delirious. And like a Target employee is like, we're going to call the cops. Like, well, what do you guys need? Is everyone okay? But luckily, Lavinia then shows up. She has a dozen naiads and fawns in her wake. And she's like, we'll take it from here. And she, Reyna is like, what are you doing here? And she's like, secret mission. And then Reyna tries to chide her for it. Lavinia points out that she just saved their asses from getting in trouble. And that Reyna is lucky she's there. Lavinia's nature friends put Reyna's leg in a splint. They, like, go off to the woods and carry her, and they also hand-feed Meg ambrosia. They don't really do much for Apollo. They just look at his zombie-esque face, and they're like, yes. This guy's got about a day to live. And they're, like, whispering about him. But he's not really hurt or anything, somehow. Reyna tells Lavinia she's still very much like, we're going to bring you up on dissertation charges for deserting your friends, your comrades. And Lavinia is basically like, hey, Fawn, it's not Dawn. I didn't write down the guy's name. It was some other name. But she tells him to play his panpipes to lull Reyna to sleep because Reyna is severely injured and keeps trying to get up and go back to camp and needs to just rest. So Lavinia just fully goes against Reyna's orders and makes her go to sleep. She then promises that she'll leave Reyna someplace safe to heal, and then tells Meg and Apollo to go do what they need to do. She still has her own secret mission, but she won't tell them what it is. She does mention that she has Dawn and Peaches, who's involved in this.
Okay.
They're getting in contact with the Nyreeds in the bay because Michael Cahale's plan to stop the boats failed. So Lavinia apparently has a whole backup plan, and Apollo's like, really shocked by this and is like, you wouldn't. But we're not really sure what this plan is. Neither is Apollo. And Meg and Apollo then head off to go back to camp. So chapter 33. Welcome to the war. We hope you enjoy your death. Please come again soon. Oh, that's a good one. Meg and Apollo decide the fastest way to get back to camp is to do like rentable bikes. They're like riding lime bikes, scooters, basically. Yeah. Ooh, scooters would have been even better.
I think Apollo can't fully stand. What's crazy That's is true. Like he can't really stand up, and the amount of exertion that biking takes.
Yeah.
I hope these are like e-bikes.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. I doubt it though. They're called the glow bikes, which I don't think are real
ones. Because like maybe. If it is glow bikes. I don't think that's a
No.
Globber Go bikes or something, but Glow bicycle model. Nope, these are not things.
I think this is the fake version of a Lime bike.
Yes.
So Meg leads Apollo on a secret path that Lavinia showed to her, and they pass a lot of bad news. There's troops marching toward Camp Jupiter filled with Blemier and Pandai. And to that, I was like, you mean like the least threatening monsters? Like,
yeah,
there's also Earthborn. They're kind of scary, big, giant ogre things. So, but again, it's literally like the Earthborn are like Shreks. So they have Shreks, they have the flying ear men, and then they have the dudes that are like really polite. It's not a scary army.
My favorite is like the progression. So in PJO, the only, like, even in Heroes of Olympus, like, you don't see, like, the army doesn't come and fight until the end. Like, the last book, near the last chapters, is where, like, the army invades, right? For PJO, it's, like, invading New York City. And then in Heroes of Olympus, it was in the invasion of camp. And, like, Gaia's entire army was there. But in this series, it's, like, every other book, Apollo's like, and then the entire army was there. And it's like, like a different kind of army each time. And they're just like constantly doing battle.
Yeah. It feels like, and it feels like the monsters, like Rick was like, I'm running out of new monsters to introduce.
I know.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need to like bring out the monsters that we've seen in this series specifically. But the monsters we've seen in this series specifically are kind of stupid. Like,
they're funny. They're funny little guys.
Yeah. They're just little guys. Yeah.
They do mention that the giant ants are there. Ah. It's like, are we going to get Dear Mama again?
God.
Our favorite. But they cut through Lavinia's secret tunnel and emerge in the middle of the war zone. So Meg immediately hops off her bike and starts charging, and Apollo draws his bow and manages to slay quite a few monsters. But overall, things are not looking good for Camp Jupiter. Giant ants are spewing acid as they run down the hillside. Roman bodies, there's like dead bodies everywhere. He mentions it, and he's like, I'm not going to think about that and who they were. Pandai are gliding in the air with their giant ears, which is just funny to me.
They can fly with their ears like Dumbo.
That one's not that threatening. That one is kind of cute. The giant ravens, though, they're kind of threatening, and they're up higher, and they're fighting with Camp Jupiter's giant eagles. So they're having a bird war in the sky.
Bird on bird violence.
Bird on bird violence. It needs to stop. The enemy keeps advancing despite the Romans' best efforts. They end up getting near the third cohort, where a centurion named Larry tells Apollo that Frank wants to see him ASAP. So a couple of third cohort legionnaires escort them towards Caldecott Tunnel to find Frank. There they find a bunch of Romans in full battle gear rushing around and carrying out orders to shore up their defenses. They meet up with Frank and Hazel, who are both there, and update them on what happened and where Reyna is. Frank tells Apollo that right now the plan is to buy him as much time as possible so he can do his whole, like, summoning ritual for godly help. Because the jar with the breath did make it out of all of this. It did not break in the car crash. That's an important note. That's, like, the whole reason they're here.
I know. Also, Apollo managed to bike with it.
With the jar.
Hopefully it had a basket.
Maybe he has a little, little basket with the little bell. So the first through fourth cohorts are apparently spread thin across the hills, while the fifth cohort is guarding New Rome, the city. Hazel offers to take Apollo and Meg to Ella and Tyson, who are waiting on Temple Hill to do the ritual. Then Terminus pops up into the cave to tell them that Tarquin is attacking from underneath, and the city is no longer secure. He apparently traveled via the sewers.
The best way to travel, in my opinion.
The most superior way for anyone to travel. Mm. It gets you anywhere.
Yeah.
Covered in shit.
Yeah.
And the fifth cohort now needs help guarding New Rome. Frank tells Hazel to go and that he'll send the fourth cohort to help, which leaves him with only three cohorts defending camp. Frank tells Terminus to open the defensive barriers at the main gate to try and funnel the enemy into one location. Hazel is, like, looking a little suspiciously at Frank and tells him not to do anything stupid, and he assures her that he's got this covered, he'll be fine. He marches up, and then Hazel tells Meg and Apollo to get on Arion with her, and they head towards New Rome. So yeah, a lot going on. We haven't had, like, a proper battle chapter in a bit.
Yeah.
They had a battle in the Burning Maze, but it was not as much. It was like they were battling the sun itself.
Yeah, it was like
Medea. Yeah. It wasn't like an army battle. It was this a small kind of reminds group. Me. Yeah, this reminds me a lot of the fourth book, which is of Percy Jackson, which is interesting because this is the fourth of Trials of Apollo.
Like Battle of
like
Labyrinth?
The Battle of the Labyrinth. Yeah, like the big battle before the final book, where there's like the ultimate climax, I guess.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where they're getting invaded and there's just like monsters coming in waves. Yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah. So I have gone over most of my notes. My only one that I do think it's really funny that Meg just like throughout this mentions a lot that she's like, oh yeah, Lavinia showed me the secret passage. And Meg seems to kind of have a better idea of what Lavinia's secret plan is and trusts her more. And I was like, I guess it is like they were bonding a lot because Apollo napped like half of this book because he's been very sick. And I thought that was funny. And I was like, I kind of want like a short story about them but I also would be kind of scared about that. It would be so chaotic about what they did.
And their conversation seems so unstable and just so, like, they're both probably having a conversation about three different topics and, like, not listening to each other. And they're like, this is friendship.
Yeah. Fun.
Fun. All right. I have chapters 34 through 36. Chapter 34. Oh, insert name here. Please hear us and fill in blank. What is this, Mad Libs? So Apollo, Meg, and Hazel meet Ella and Tyson at the steps of the Jupiter Temple. They've been waiting, and Ella is afraid that they're too late to now start the ceremony. Apollo jumps off of Arion's back, but Meg stays on with Hazel. She doesn't think she's needed for the summoning, and she thinks her help will be better served in the battle. She plans to use the battle unicorns, and so together she and Meg head out. Apollo has a moment where he's just like, the last thing Meg, if Meg dies in this battle, the last thing she would have said to me is, I'm going to unleash the unicorns. And what an epic way to go out.
It's a great last line.
Mm-hmm. Ella asks Apollo to pick a temple, aka a god, to ask help from. Apollo goes through the list. He's like a little tempted to ask Jupiter because Jupiter is definitely the one who could probably solve every single problem that they have, easily defeat the emperors, easily defend camp and help heal Apollo, but there's also a huge chance that he won't come through, and Apollo doesn't really want to beg his father, the actual villain of the series, for help. Instead, he chooses Diana, one, because she's super powerful and can bring a lot of aid to them, but also because he's very sure at this point, because of the way that the poison has been seeping into him, that he's probably gonna die. And so he would really like to see his sister, who he misses a lot, one last time. Ella walks Apollo through the steps of, like, lighting a fire, which takes him a long time because he hasn't lit a fire manually in a long time. And also he's, like, low-key dying. Ella makes a little potion and pours it into the fire pit and then asks Apollo to read the lines of the prophecy that are unfortunately tattooed onto Tyson's armpit. Mm-hmm. Apollo hesitates and stumbles through, and when he finishes, nothing happens. Ella is worried they did the spell wrong, or it might be too late, or Apollo hesitated too much, but all they can really do is wait. So she tells Apollo to rejoin the fighting while she and Tyson wait for the god to hopefully appear. an extremely wounded Apollo then runs out to battle. Chapter 35. Such a deal for you, two for one single combat, kill us both for free. Apollo wheezes and huffs all the way. This is where my, like, visual understanding of where they were was very confused, because he runs uphill and then he runs downhill to the highway. So he sees a scarred wasteland of the battlefield, and he's noticed that luckily and impressively, the Emperor's army seems to have gone down from thousands to hundreds, thanks to the efforts of the legions. The 12th Legion in particular is standing in formation with Hannibal the elephant, and Frank is a giant bear that's like 8 feet tall, with arrows that are unfortunately sunk into his shoulder. Commodus and Caligula are in, like, the gaudiest armor. Like, think super glued, bejeweled crystals all over their breastplates. And they're being pulled. I know, it's like they have interesting taste for sure.
They do.
They're being pulled in a chariot by a Pegasi whose wings have been cut off, which by the sight of it, Apollo, like, actually, like, gags a little bit because it's horrible to see. But it also is very confusing because what happened to the horse government by the horses for the horses?
Yeah, I thought they were pro-horse.
I know. He was ready to make the entire country pro-horse, and he's using, like, just also, what, just keep the wings on the if you're gonna use the Pegasi instead of using a normal horse, why wouldn't you just use it to your full advantage? Don't you want to fly?
Like, that's way cooler.
Yeah,
way more useful to you.
Well, Apollo explains to us, the reader, that's because they're trying to send a message of, like, we will scar and destroy everything beautiful just to get what we want. We want full domination.
Gross.
Which is silly, because it's, I mean, this is what the thing is with these two emperors, it's especially Commodus, it's all about theatrics rather than actual functionality.
That's true.
So
and I thought for Caligula it was all about the horses. But
I know, not. What is even a Caligula about? He's about what, boats and then nothing else?
Yeah. Fire. He likes burning a maze.
That's true. Commodus liked ostriches and basketball.
Yeah. And what's the car racing?
Oh, like the Indy 500 NASCAR.
That's what it's called.
So he's like, I'm going to take, oh God, I still laugh when I think of what a fun villain, to be honest.
He's so fun. The point when the basketballs rained down, I was like, this is great.
Mine's was, he was like, okay, just stay right there. I'm going to do a lap and then I'm going to run you over with my car.
Oh, so good.
So Apollo howls when he sees these Pegasi, the like mutilated Pegasi, which causes the army to turn and try to locate the source of the noise. But then instead of like having this amazing moment in battle where he charges, he basically falls downhill into the highway, causing Caligula to burst out laughing. Poor Commodus can't see, so he's like, what's happening? Can you describe it to me? What is Apollo doing? And so Caligula does describe Apollo's pitiful state. Caligula then turns to Frank and gives him the opportunity to surrender. Frank turns back into a human with blood all over his face and arrows in his armor, and his left arm is basically useless. So Frank basically refuses to surrender, but he also does not want any more bloodshed to happen. So basically he's refusing to fight and he's refusing to surrender. So instead he challenges the emperors to single combat, both of them against him. This is a difficult, I know, this is a difficult choice for the emperors, because a challenge has been issued in front of all their friends. They can't say no because they're going to look fans. Weak. They're fans. But there isn't a lot of honor in 2v1, especially when that one is very injured. So they're going to have to take him up on it. If Frank dies, the remaining troops will stand down and the emperors will just get to march straight into camp. If somehow the emperors are both killed, the troops will leave camp alone. Apollo can't stand the thought of Frank fighting alone, so he declares himself in the fight as well. Yikes. Frank is horrified, which is not what Apollo hoped for. And he was like, oh, did I mess something up of your plan? Like, something's wrong here. The emperors are delighted, and Frank sends his troops away, while the emperors keep theirs as an audience. Frank comes close to Apollo and privately tells him that, yes, he is interfering with the plan. So when Frank says, quote unquote, time's up, Apollo has to run away as fast as he can. Apollo's torn because he's like, I'm not going to run away and leave you, but I also don't know what Frank's plan is. So he's like, maybe it will be something that I do need to run away for. So he decides to wait it out and see. The four get ready in position, and Caligula is like matched up with Frank, and Apollo is matched up with a blind but very excited Commodus. So the fight begins.
I do love that Frank is bringing some theatrics to this. Like, we don't usually see as much theatrics from the good side, but the whole like time's up thing, he's like, he has a whole like code word. He has a whole theatrical plan, and I like that he's bringing that to the good side. Me too.
And this honestly was a great performance by Frank, this next chapter. As devastating as it is, it was beautifully executed.
Right? 10 out of Broadway.
Broadway, exactly. If there was, if Apollo had sang, I think that would have been, I mean, I would have hated it, but it would have been the cherry on top.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Chapter 36, Not Again, My Heart. How many syllables is total hopelessness? So this haiku, I was like, read it and then became really nervous because after he said, not again, my heart, I was like, what was happening? No, I can't deal with this. So even though Commodus is blind, he's able to dodge Apollo's arrows and charge him, and he snaps his bow in half. So Apollo is down to his like ukulele now. Commodus takes a couple hits at Apollo and then turns to his audience to get their reaction applause. Honestly, the only reason that Apollo survives any of this in this entire chapter is Commodus keeps having to have like bow to his audience and like, you know, hype them up, get them on their feet, bask in their applause, and it gives Apollo time. So in this instance, it gives Apollo time to look over at Frank and Caligula, who are slowly circling each other and trading blows. They're more evenly matched than Apollo and Commodus are.
Yeah.
So like I said, Apollo only has his ukulele left. So he's like, okay, what song should I sing? And as he like gets ready, he's like strums it to start like thinking of a song. Commodus hears it and charges. Luckily, the asphalt is soft from all the fire and explosion from before. So when Commodus goes for like a kill swipe, his sword gets stuck in the asphalt for a moment. Frank throws gravel at Caligula's eyes, and then they meet up for a second to remind Apollo of the plan. Frank hopes that they're just buying time for the moment for godly help to arrive, but Apollo now is becoming more and more sure that's not going to happen. So Frank assures them that he has other plans just in case. Frank pushes Caligula in battle closer to the tunnel, and Apollo tries to swing his ukulele at Commodus, who yanks it from him and then crushes it in his hands, which I was like, I know we're supposed to feel pretty devastated because there's an emotional connection Apollo has to the ukulele, but I was so happy. I was like, no more singing.
Finally, someone did it, you know? Commodus was brave enough to do what no one else could.
If I could go in that book and smash the ukulele myself, I would.
Yeah, this is like in Glee when Rachel had laryngitis, you know? Taking away the singing from
Apollo. Oh, yes. I don't remember plot points in Glee that much. That's
probably good. It was near the end of my Glee run.
Mm.
Yeah.
So in a blind rage, Apollo swings his fist at Commodus and surprised when the punch leaves a dent in Commodus's armor. Because of his anger, Apollo has a brief surge of his godly power. So now they're more evenly matched, so they have a proper fist fight for a while.
That's hilarious to me that these four dudes are just fist fighting. like Frank throws gravel? Like, what?
These like pandai who like have their ears flapped. These blemiers like politely golf clapping in the corner. Yeah. Everyone's just like sitting around waiting. What I really want to know is like there's several hundred guys, right? I'm thinking of like the guys in the back who have no idea why they're not charging and they're like, what's going on? I know.
But they're blemiers. They're not tall.
No. They're like, what's going on, dude? Like, why aren't we fighting? Like, is there a line or something?
And they're all just like cheering when everyone else does, not knowing for what. That's why they need the seating in a stadium.
Yeah, that's why the Colosseum was invented. They should have just taken it to a Colosseum rather than just the highway.
Yeah.
So Apollo is able to land violent punches, including one to Commodus's face, like breaking his nose. But he realizes his energy is running out and his godly power is running out. And now the zombie poison is really starting to take effect. Apollo also becomes aware as they're fighting that they're surrounded by a lot of unmarked crates stacked in the tunnel and orange traffic barrels. He's reminded of the urns he had seen Frank have his workers carry around a couple days ago. There also seems to be oil poured into a thin groove, like grooves all like every 4 or 5 feet in the carved into the asphalt. Frank keeps retreating further and further into the tunnel, bringing the emperors with him. Caligula's lieutenant calls out and tries to warn him. He's like, you guys are going too far. Maybe not go into the tunnel. We can't see you anymore.
We can't clap anymore.
You know. But Caligula is trying to focus on the fight and tells him to shut up. Right before Caligula is about to stab Frank, Frank turns into a common swift, which is a bird.
What is that? Okay.
It's a little bird.
I assumed, but I was like, I don't really know what that is.
And he dives his beak into Caligula's eyes. He's like, if they're going to be emperors, they all got to be blind. He turns back into a human and tells Apollo to hobble Commodus. He can't take them both out. And if this plan is going to work, he needs Apollo's help. He turns back into a bird before Apollo can even digest what's going on. Commodus beats a weakened Apollo down and turns to his fans again to get the hype. Apollo has no more energy left, but he knows he has to help Frank. He sees Commodus's dagger, which is strapped to his calf, grabs it and stabs Commodus in the back. He has no energy left and is essentially waiting to be killed at this time. He stands up and throws the dagger to the side. He's like, might as well just do what you're going to do. He turns to see Caligula about to bring his sword down on Frank with glee, but luckily Frank's praetor's cape is able to turn back weapons, which is a weird way to say it's a shield, and it protects him. Frank slams Caligula against the wall and tells Apollo time's up. Apollo knows that it's his cue to run, but he can't. He sees Frank grab his firewood life piece from his pouch, and he draws all the power from it to help him continue to choke out Caligula. Frank orders Apollo to go and says, "If I'm going to burn, I might as well burn bright. This is for Jason." The firewood combusts and flames roar around Frank's body, sparking the oil in that is in the grooves, leading towards what now Apollo understands are barrels of Greek fire. As Frank becomes a column of flames and Caligula disintegrates into white hot embers, Apollo follows Frank's orders and runs away right as the tunnel erupts like a volcano. So my notes are mostly just upset of me being like, I'm so tired of this series. Like, what the fuck? Like, is this a Game of Thrones? Calm down. That's what
I did think, though, this scene really reminds me of Game of Thrones. The one, was it season six? It was before it got bad. The end of, like, the finale, I think, of season six, when they explode the church in Greek fire.
Oh, yeah.
That's like what it always makes me think of. Or what did they called it something else, but it's basically the same thing as Greek fire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very similar vibes. And it's also like the violence of it, mm-hmm. where it's like when you have a one-on-one battle, you're hoping things are going your way, but it can easily just change very fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my prediction is I think Artemis or Diana is going to come down now. And I also, I don't know if it's more of a hope as much as it is a prediction that Frank will somehow be alive. He just won't be able to shapeshift anymore because he's like, he's going to be free of the stupid firewood, but that was where his power was. So he's just going to be Frank, but it could be one of two ways. Like, Frank could be dead, which then Hazel is going to kill Tarquin simply out of anger. And I think Artemis is also going to come just as Apollo starts turning into a zombie. And I think Meg is going to have a moment of like, look at me, Apollo, it's me, Meg.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come Maybe back Raina. To yourself.
Yeah, come back to yourself. Maybe Raina will do that. I think that would be worse. I hope it's Meg.
Yeah, that would definitely be worse.
Yeah. All right, some quick lightning bolt round questions.
All righty, let's do it.
All right, so imagine you're a decent fighter in this situation. Because I'm like, okay. You can't. Okay, look, we have to put ourselves in a different position. Would you challenge the leader? You're a leader. Would you challenge the leader of the opposition to a 1v1 to save your troops?
I feel like, yeah. But, like, there'd have to be some, I'd have to definitely trust that the person would respect that, you know, that the troops would actually leave if their leader died and not just try to kill everyone.
I think it would also have depend to
on, like, what's going on in my life, you know? Do I have a family to provide for, or am I just, like, a leader, you know?
I think it also depends on how confident I am in my skills. Because if I'm not a good, like, I'm a decent fighter, but if this dude is, like, much better, I think I take a better chance of, like, teamwork in one-on-one. Yeah.
I would do it if I had, like, thought about it in advance. Like Frank clearly is, like, I have this whole plan. I'm with this cave. Like, he clearly has some kind of larger plan going on. And if I had thought about it in advance, I totally would. If I knew I could win. I only take on tasks if I know I can succeed. Duh. My question is, would you rather fight a battle on land or at sea? They're kind of doing both because they have ships and land battling.
Well, that was my question. It's like, am I trying to tread water while fighting? Because I don't think I could do that.
No, I imagine it's like a boat battle. Like, we're talking like a land battle or like a ship, like a pirate battle, you know?
Oh, 100% land. Because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of, like, you and I have talked about this, a lot of, like, small people. I mean, I'm super tall, but I can imagine a small person's defense is, like, to, like, be sneaky and hide and climb things. And I can't do that at sea. Like, I'm isolated and constricted to just whatever vessel we're on. Yeah. I can't run away or, like, gain advantage or dodge as well. Like, so I'd say land.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the sea battle, too, It's like if your ship's damaged, like you're all dead. You're all drowning.
Yeah, that's true.
There's nowhere to go. Whereas a land battle, I could just run away.
Exactly. You're never going to like sink into the ocean or sink into the earth. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this last one we got from Chloe. I don't remember. I think it was on Instagram. If you had to pick like this chapter of your life with alliteration, the way like Tyrant's Tomb is, what would you name your life? I have no idea.
Probably right now it's Silly Shenanigans, because I've had a very silly summer where I've just done a lot of shenanigans.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we're getting into No Friends.
Oh.
No Friends November.
Oh.
Where it's gonna sad. It was more of like, I've done so many silly shenanigans, I need to conserve money and do No Friends November.
It's like No Shave November, but
yeah,
no for friends. Your social life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's fair. I feel like I really want to use broad in mine, like I'm a broad, you know, or a lass, but I've been struggling to think of an adjective to describe myself that starts with the same letter. Like a burnt out broad.
That's a good one. Burnt out broad and silly shenanigans.
And silly shenanigans.
Yes.
I'd read that book.
I would too. Those chapters sound interesting.
They do. They sure do.
Burnt out broad seems like it'd be pretty sad, but yeah.
Yeah, probably. But yeah. I feel like it could also be like one of those like airport books, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a happy ending.
Okay, let me see. Give me a haiku.
Oh, no.
Where you use and being a dog mom. Okay. Oh, no. Burnt out broad daylight. I didn't really understand it. Burnt out broad daylight. Dog mom's endless toil displayed. Rest and dusk's embrace.
Oh, does that mean going to sleep? Like go to bed? Okay.
Go to bed at a reasonable time, Aaron.
I like that. That's good. That's the haiku for my chapter.
Okay, let me do one for me. A haiku
for silly shenanigans. I think this is the true purpose of ChatGPT is to make cookies.
Summer's wild delight. Oh. Unemployed silly flights. Laughter in the light.
That's cute.
That one's really cute. Yours is so depressing.
Mine's just cute. Mine's just like, go to bed. It's like, so silly. So summer, so fun.
This is great.
Okay,
well, there's our
literature. Anyways, next week, I guess we're finishing this book.
Crazy.
Which is really weird. I feel like we just started. I say that every time.
I know, every time we're shocked.
Every time I'm shocked. And
there's only one. I think only Lost Hero. We were like, why won't this book end?
That book felt so long. It that was the only one that I was like, it does not feel like we just started that one.
What we also someone, did it like, in the winter.
I feel like I probably did say that, though. Like, someone will find it and be like, actually, you said that.
Well, also, like, I feel like we did it in the winter time, and it was, like, cold and depressing, and we were like, I think it was like Omicron too, so everything was shut down.
That's true.
So depression was at its highest.
What was that, 2022?
Yes, 2022. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, good times.
Well, if you're interested in supporting us, you can find us on Patreon. I feel like the last couple chapters we've gone a little bit crazier and a little bit more off topic, so we're sorry. I don't see us changing in the future, so
there won't if you want to give us money change. About it,
no. It's just a blanket apology.
So the link we're like Apollo, you know. we recognize. We have a conscience.
We recognize it, and we will won't do nothing farther. To change. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the link is in the episode description, as well as a link to send an audio message. I see that there's a couple. I get the email, so I get emails every time you guys send us an audio message, so... very excited that you guys continue to do so.
Yeah, gotta get caught up on them. And in the meantime, you can find us on social media at Camp Half Pod. You can also email us camphalfpod@gmail.com. And you can message us on either of those places to get the link to join the Discord, which is great. It's a good way to connect with y'all.
Yeah. If you haven't already, rate us and review us. 5 stars only, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until then, see you next time.
Bye-bye.